We are on Yud Ches Amud Beis at the two dots, the first wide lines, the first medium-sized lines, I should say. We were discussing a couple weeks ago about the idea of whether or not after 120 years, if a person who has any idea in the afterlife of what's happening in this world. And we brought this down because there was a story of two gedolim that were walking by the names of Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Yonasan in a Beis HaKvaros. They were in a cemetery. And Rabbi Yonasan, he had his tzitzis dangling out in the Beis HaKvaros. And he was told, you have to tuck them in. Lol Garush, you can't allow your tzitzis to be out like that. And he's like, what's the difference? They don't even know anyway. And that was the whole question of whether or not Mason know. And that's what we're going to continue with this thought process on the two dots, first line where the lines are medium sized. B'nei Reb Chiya, Nofuk L'Kyoryata. It says that this group of the children of Reb Chiya, they went out to the fields, which means even though they were huge Talmid Chachamim, ultimately they decided to work. And when this happened, because they stopped learning to the same capacity they usually did, you can imagine, Yakir Luhu Talmidayhu, their learning became heavy upon them, which is a nice way of saying that they forgot a lot of their learning. So because of this, some people would forget their learning. They'd be like, who cares? So what? What's the difference? I have a good field, I have a good parnasa. But when you have Talmidei Chachamim that don't remember their learning, it pains them. And Havi Kometzari Ladkuri. They were in pain just trying to remember all the things that they had forgotten, or just trying to do as much as they can as far as they're remembering. Armalei Chad L'Chavrei. So one turned to his friend and said, Yad Avoin Bahaitzar, do you think our father knows the pain that we're undergoing currently? And again, this is referring to a situation where their father had already died. So they were wondering, do you think our father really knows our sufferings that we're going through? So this was the discussion. Armalei said, Armalei Idach, so the other one turned to them and said, Mana Yada, how do you expect him to have known or to know our pain?
He's not here anymore.
Vaksiv, after all, it's written the Pasuk, Yechavdu Balavo Yada. The children give kavod to him, they honor the father, Voyada, and he has no idea. So the Pasuk explicitly, Eev says that someone who's died has no idea even when they're being honored. So on this, he answers, what are you talking about? That's true, but if you look in the same parak, Armalei Idof, he says, well, Yada, what do you mean they don't know? Voksim, but it's written again in Eev, in Parak Yudalid, Ach Besaro Alav Yichav, it says his flesh causes him pain and anguish, Benashua Alav Ta'avel, and his soul he will mourn over. So therefore, what do we see? The Omer Rabbi Yitzchak says, based on this pasuk, Kasha Rim Lameis Kamechat Bebasar Chai. It's a pretty powerful line. Power is painful to a mace, it is a rima, a worm, comparable to a mechet taking a sharp, long needle and piercing it through a living man's flesh. That is the pain of the rima of a mace. And the Mefarshim is actually brought down in Perkei Avos, when it says marba baser, marba rima, that the inyan of tsar is not just a physical pain as we understand it, but the idea of the rima attacking the body is that the pain is that we did not elevate our bodies to that of ruchnius, but rather we're just gashmius, and therefore the attack of the body, the pain is not a physical one, but it's a suffering of realizing that we did not reach the potential that we could have. That's how some, most of the portion explain it. It doesn't literally mean that you're in physical pain, feel anything. It's spiritual pain, which could even be even as intense or
must,
more.
There must be something, because we say that kibbutz ha'ein is a feel of achim b'sasa.
Right.
So, I mean, they didn't know, so what's the purpose of it?
True. I mean, there is an idea of the neshama being elevated in, obviously, the Olam Haba, which could be that they don't know why it's happening. It's just maybe, maybe by kibbutz ha'ein, so it affects. Or kibbutz ha'ein could also be for yourself, not necessarily for the parent, it could be for the child. But, yeah, it's possible that could have been a raya too. But instead they bring this as a raya, that in fact that a person who dies feels pain. So Amri says, you're right, but maybe Betzara did who yadai? Betzara diachrina lo yadai. Maybe the only pain that a mace feels is his own pain. And that's what Rashi says, Sar did who, third line, Sargufa mamish, kigona kitsas rima. They feel the pain which is upon their own body. So anything outside of themselves, maybe they don't feel, right? So therefore, this is not necessarily a raya. So it's possible that our father doesn't really sense our pain. Velo, you're telling me it's not so. You're telling me that they do not feel pain, or that they do not know what's happening in this world, Lasagna. But we learned in a brisa, Masa b'chassad echad, the story of a chassad. It's interesting, those tell us the person who it was. We'll get back to that in a second. Shenasan dinu ani, be'er Rosh Hashanah. On Erev Rosh Hashanah, he did a very nice thing. He gave a coin, but it wasn't just a big, not a little coin, because it was b'shnei b'tzaris, it was a time of a famine, right? So people were starving. And he was willing to take one of his last coins that he owned and gave it to this Ani. And you would think such a tremendous, a terrific act of being so kind as to giving a coin to an Ani, you would hope would be well received by the missus. Unfortunately, it says, that Nito Ishto, his wife was very distraught about, how could you have done such a thing? We're starving. We have a family, and you gave a coin when you're the chesed base to an ani. How could you have done such a thing? It's years of famine. So what did he do? She kicked him out of the house. Almost sounds like v'holach, and therefore he went the long of Esakvaros, and he went to sleep in a cemetery. Okay, so we're about seven lines when the lines are the medium-sized lines. And on this, the Marsha asks the question, it says, that testifies, Masa b'chassad echad, this is a chassad, great guy, big tzaddik. What did he do? So he gave some money, okay, you're a big tzaddik, right, that's fine. But what did he do? He went on Rosh Hashanah, a time when you would think is a time of being pure. And what did he do? He slept in a makom tuma, right, in the Beis HaKavaros. How could he have done such a thing? It's hard to believe. And therefore the Ritva says, as we see this story, and it gets even harder and harder to believe, the Ritva says it was just a dream. It was a dream. This whole story was a dream. But as it's being recalled, this level of a dream, as the Marshal says, on Rosh Hashanah has levels of truth which are greater than on other nights. So therefore, that's how we can possibly understand this whole next piece of Gemara. It's a lengthy story, so you shouldn't think this is just unbelievable. How did this happen? The answer is maybe it was a chalol. That's how the Marsha, quoting the words of the Ritva, interprets it. Okay, so the Shama, so what did he do when he was in the cemetery? So he was supposed to sleep, but probably not the most comfortable place to sleep. So what did he do? Yeah, eavesdrop. And what did he do? The Shama shtei ruchos shemesapra zulazu. He heard two spirits speaking with one another. Amr chad l'chavata once said to her friend, Chaverta, my friend, come with me and let us swim and float throughout the world. After all, it's Rosh Hashanah. This is where you get some really interesting news. The Nishma Machri Apargud will hear from the opposite side of the curtain, which You'll be able to hear all the interesting things. Ma'pranios bolol, all the problems and downfalls that will happen to this world. So let's go and find out what's going to happen. This is like going to the movies, I guess, in the afterworld. So amru l'chavrta, so the friend said, Eini yechoil, I am unable to go with you. I am unable to go. Why? Shani kvura b'machsel shel kadam, because I am buried in a mat of reeds. My body has been wrapped around in this type of a mat. And therefore, because of this, it sounds like, this is not the correct reading, but we'll just read it this way for a moment, because we'll explain it better in a few lines from now, is that the body was stuck there, so that he couldn't get out. Which, of course, what do you mean? That's the guf, that's the neshama. The neshama should leave. What's the difference? We'll explain that in a second. Elchiyat, you go. Umashat, shamas, that which you hear, amuli, tell me. So I can't go, but next best thing, I'll stick around here. I can't go anywhere. You come back and tell me all this news. So halchahi, so she went, b'shatan, she was floating. Uvav amrula chavrta. So she went and she came back to her friend and said the following. Chavarti mashama, she said, so what did you hear? Viachwa your parga on the other side of the current. So Amrullah said, I'll tell you. Shemati Shikozar Abravi Rishona Barad Mal. Anyone who plants in the Ravi Rishon, in the first rainfall, then Bara, the hail, is going to shatter it. It's going to break it all. Okay? And so, obviously, you would not want to plant Ravi Rishon. Why would that cause, why would the hail, which comes afterwards, break it? So, if you look in Rashi, Barad Malka Oto, so Rashi says, She'asid Barad Lipol, Samach Lurvia, and we're going to borrow it, or it says in the parentheses on the left, Shnia, that event after the first rainfall, when it comes to the second rainfall, this is what will happen. The hail is going to come. Umash and Nizra Kfar, anyone who planted already, Hukshu, that crops have already begun to root and they're hard. Ba'barad Shovran, the hail is going to break it. Ba'nizra Shnia, anyone who plants by the second rainfall, Adayin Rachu, it's still soft. And Nishvar Bishmil Habarad, and it's not going to break due to the hail. So therefore, if you've heard this, what they say by stocks, insider trading, this information, you would probably want to plant in the Ravina Shnia, the second rainfall. So that's exactly what this chassid did. So, Holach Hu, Mizar Ravina Shnia. You want to plant it by the second rainfall. Again, bearing in mind, this is a dream. So what happened? Shekul Olam Kulo Lach, Shalolo Lach. When it came to the entire world, because they all planted at the first opportunity, which is the first rainfall, it was destroyed by the hail. And his was not destroyed. So again, the question is, if he was really a chassid, why didn't he tell everyone? The answer is because it was a dream. If it was real, he probably would have informed everyone as well. So it was his dream.
Informed him what? That he dreamt something?
Informed him if it was, this whole thing was not a dream, it was really happening, and that he planted this. Why didn't he inform all the other people? Don't plant the first.
And if you're the chassid, then listen, I had a dream, and I got this.
No, this whole thing's a dream. Even this is a dream.
Well, even this part.
The Ritva explains this whole episode is a dream, right? Because otherwise, it's a little heavy.
And his wife is also with Tzadikas. Was her a dream also?
It doesn't say that she was with Tzadikas. It says that she kicked him. She was very upset that she gave, right? So that also might have been a dream. I might have thought he was a chassid. But nonetheless, that's how some explain it. That was year number one. Well, Shona Acheres, another year comes, a year later, which again, why would a whole year went by, but again, if he's this whole thing is just one dream. Holch v'lon b'veis akvaros. That makes no sense. The first time, he went because he was kicked out of the house. Now, why is he going to b'veis akvaros? Because he's getting some good tips in the basic verse in Rosh Hashanah. He heard again these two voices speaking one another. So one asked the other, "Boy, why don't you come and flow with me in the world?" We'll find out what's going on in the world. So Amrullah, So Amalos, she said back to her friend, Chavarti said, Lo kach amarti loch, didn't I already tell you, Ein yechola, I'm not able to go. Shani kvura v'machsan shel kanim, I'm buried in this, how to read. El chiat, you go. Masha shamos boy v'amarli. That which you hear, come back and tell me. So Holocha, so she went, Mishata, and she was floating. Bob, she came back, the Amrullah, Chavarta, Chavarti, Mashamos, Meachir, Pargun. What did you hear? What did you hear? So Amrullah, so she said, you know what? I heard something which is quite different than this past year. Shemati, Shekol, Hazreb, Revi, Shnia, anyone who plants by the second rainfall, Shidapoin, Malcha. They will be hit with a blight. And you can imagine what happened. Oh, so whole lizarber via rishina shalkol oilam kulo nishta v'sholo nishta. So he went and planted by the first rainfall. The entire world realized, you know, we better not plant by the first rainfall, because last year when we planted by the first rainfall, Barad came and destroyed everything. Do you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna plant by the second rainfall. So this way, if Barad comes, we'll be safe. Of course, one of them happening, that they were hit with a blight. And blight has the power of destroying things which are soft. But that which was already planted and took root and hard will not have an effect upon it. And therefore, everyone else's was spoiled. Shlolonisht. But that which he had was not spoiled. So Amrulo Ishto, so his wife, his charming wife that Sadeka said, I don't know what's going on over here, but I want to find out. My shock, and why was it when it came to last year? Shalkol Olam Kul, the entire world, everyone. Look, they were hit with this terrible bara came upon them. However, Shalach, look, when it came to yours, nothing happened, because you were the only person that planted this during the Revi Shnia, which made no sense, that you waited. No one waits. You waited. And this is what happened. Okay, so we thought maybe that was just beginner's luck. But now I see that there's something fishy going on. B'yachsham, and now, shokolom kulo nishtav, v'shalachlo nishtav, everyone else was spoiled, yours is not spoiled because you flipped it. So, what's going on over here? Tell me the inside scoop. So, what did the chassid do? Sochlo kol dvarim halolu. So he said, he spilled the beans. He told her all of this information. So Amru, it said, Lo hayu yamim muatim, it didn't take a whole long time. You give a woman a little bit of news, and that juicy news is going to spread. Ashenachlo katata ben ishto shel oso chasid, ben ima shel oso riva. There was a quarrel, there was a katata, an argument between the chasid's wife and the mother of this girl who was buried in the cemetery. So Amrullah, so she said to her, Lachi v'erach avicha, go and look at your daughter, she kavur v'machsel shel kana. Obviously they were calling each other names, and then she got to calling her daughter a name, and said, who do you think you are? You bury your daughter in such a terrible way, in mats of reeds. L'shanach, okay, which is interesting, a little Lashon Hara or something on the side, okay. Lashana Acheres, another year goes by. Year number 3. Halach v'lan b'veis akvaris. He went back to the cemetery. Okay. Hishama osin ruchosh m'samsum zu. They were talking to one another again. Amrullah chavarti, so the friend said, Bo'av nosh b'olam. A third time, this apparently doesn't have very good memory, asks, do you want to please join me? The Nishma Machri Pargud Machronis Bob Olam, we'll find out what's going on, what will happen to the world. So Amrullah Chaverti, so she said, Hinakti Dvarim Shabeni Lavencha Kvar Nishma'u Bein Hachayim. Leave me alone, stop talking, because the words that are between ourselves are already being heard, Bein Hachayim. People in the living world are hearing our conversations. So, what is the whole purpose of the... Let's just see the next line, then maybe we'll understand this a little bit. Alma, what do we see from here? Yada. We see that they know. What do they know? So the whole purpose of this is, as we said, that there were the children of Rav Chiya that were suffering because they didn't remember. They were trying to learn, remember the things that they had learned, and it just couldn't come back to them. And therefore they asked, does our father know the suffering? And they were wondering, does our father feel or understand what's going on? And the answer, based on this story, is clear that people in the afterlife are aware of what's happening. Bein Hachai, because otherwise, how did this girl who was buried, Maksel Shokanim, how did she know that there was a quarrel and that there was this guy that was there? Must be he knew, right? That there was something which was known. They do know what's going on in this world. And for the Gemara, no, it's not necessarily a proof. Dilma Inish Achrina Shachiv, the Azov Amr Lahu. Maybe the Mason don't have any idea what's going on in this world. But we see that they talk to one another. So since they talked to one another, what might have happened was this. There might have been someone that heard about this whole episode, this quarrel between the Chassid's wife and this girl's mother. And therefore, when this person who heard it died later, she might have informed her about this whole episode. But it's not necessarily proof that Mesim are aware of what's happening in this world by themselves. If they themselves inform one another, they can tell each other in the afterworld, oh, by the way, you died 50 years ago, and I passed away 3 weeks ago, let me tell you what happened the past 50 years in this world. That's one thing. But for them to be able to hear, to understand on their own, at this point, the Gemara is not concluding that that's necessarily the case. Now.
But isn't that kind of backwards? Because, you know, what we're saying here is that somebody who died later told them about it, but they predicted it before it happened. How could somebody who died later have told them that it happened, but it didn't happen yet?
No, that was after the whole story happened. After this happened, right? Someone died just a few minutes ago, and then informed them of everything that we had up until this point. That makes sense?
But no, this man is saying that he heard them talking and it predicted something that was a future event. So how could somebody who died
that was in a dream. His whole storyline is a dream.
Yeah.
They tried to explain it that the question they're asking is, can they see people who are dead understand them here? And the thing is that somebody came back and gave them another story. That they heard about that scenario of the fight between these two people later on. And then she surmised that this was about herself.
All right,
but
I mean, still, it doesn't explain.
I have even a bigger problem.
Yeah, it's not.
The Torah is just not going to. The Torah is just not going to tell a story unless we're supposed to get something out of the story.
Correct.
I got nothing out of the story at all.
Okay. Well, we tried to bring a proof.
Proof of what?
To prove that Mason are able to.
Something says that
to make them know what's going on in the world.
Yeah. So that was what we're trying to accomplish.
Don't we have an understanding that Mason should be at a different madriga of Lush and Hara back and forth and discussing what's going to happen in this world, like towards the Vientas and the Tenements? I mean, that's what they're describing here.
That's what it sounds like. That's how I tried to make it sound. But
I thought Mason speak very nicely.
There's clearly more to it.
Yeah, there have to be.
So let me share with you a couple thoughts.
Yeah, that's motion. Well, Torah says that where do you go?
Yeah.
He went to the other books, tell them that Hashem is keeping his promise and bringing the Jews out of this realm.
Okay, so?
So you have high degrees of speaking over there.
You said it's probably going to be it's the last line on this Amud. Not from that Pasuk, but that is going to be one of the Ryans, the Moshe's conversation to the others.
I see it,
And that, the last Rashi.
But that still doesn't explain it.
All right, so let me share with you a few things which are derived from the story.
That can make sure that understood.
Yeah, I understand.
One of the questions is many questions based on the story. But one question that can be asked is, why did she keep asking year after year the exact same question? I mean, obviously trying to make fun of her that she is tied down by these the mat of reeds.
No, she has a memory of a fish.
It's possible. That's not what the Slach gives a different interpretation.
Okay.
And he says, like the other question is, V'chi haguf olam mikavro, is it the body that ascends from the grave? Doesn't make any sense. It when the one is speaking to the other, it's not the body, it's the neshama, right? It's one of the neshama. So what's the difference if the body is physically tied down or surrounded by these reeds? Who cares? Why isn't that a reason why she can go? And again, he said, why every year she keeps asking the same question? So the reason, as he says, is as follows, just a few lines, but I'll share it with you. The kolzman shlo nit achal habasar ein hanefesh yochol lifrod mimenu, that there the reason why halakhically we bury a person in a specific way is so that the body should decompose in a relatively quick way, quick time. Because as long as shlo nit achal, as long as that has process has not happened, Ein ha-nefesh yochel lehifrod mimenu. The nefesh cannot separate from the body. It's only when the body is lost its... Right, that's the only time the nefesh can leave.
I have to differ with you markedly. Because if you listen to Hasidic literature,
yes,
only tzaddikim don't decompose.
Right. Tzaddikim's bodies
don't decompose.
Do not decompose.
So therefore, their neshama, therefore, cannot, based on what you said, ever leave their non-decomposed body.
They're probably the exception.
No. Don't give me exceptions. This is not difficult. Okay? We just made a statement. The body must decompose before the neshama is able to go ahead.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
A tzaddik does not decompose.
Correct. Or some tzaddikim.
There's
a Gemara about it, but yes.
So, how do we go ahead and put both of these elements together?
I will answer that in about 30 seconds. And you'll be very satisfied with the answer. But before I do that, let me just finish the Slach. Okay, it's a good, very good question. But before we do that, let's what the Slach says. Assuming that this premise of what the Slach says is the case, that the neshama cannot leave until the body is completely decomposed, therefore, she kept asking year after year, let's go. And therefore, the problem, what she was saying is, I was buried in a machzela shel kanim, was that this was something in which caused my body not to decompose. And therefore, that was what she kept saying. That's what she kept asking.
Are you decomposed yet? Hello, are you decomposed yet? Can you not laugh now?
Something along those
lines. Sorry, my head's still here.
Correct. Well, that's the way that the Slach explains it. Now, it's brought down in the end, in the end of Parshas Vayechi, that Yaakov, when he died, it says that he was embalmed.
Yes.
Which the Shaila is, how could this be allowed? How can you embalm? And should have brought this down.
It couldn't be buried all that time until to come bring Asma.
But we don't allow a person to be embalmed.
Yeah,
so that's one.
We want buried in Mitzrayim. So he wanted to be buried in Martha Matpel with his family. Not how long that trip took.
Okay.
More than that, it says by a contour of Yosef.
Right.
And then it says that they brought the Asmot of Yosef, so he was
right.
Embalmed and he decomposed anyhow.
Ultimately, after hundreds of years, it's still.
I thought they kept
work.
Him in water, didn't they? Keep
he was in the Yam Sof.
In the Yam Sof, right?
In the Nile.
He was in a tailor in the Yam Sof.
New York.
He was in the Nile. So anyway, so that's one way that some answer, but some explain like this: why is it an issur to embalm? What's the big deal? So the word is, as we're saying, is that by you embalming the remains of your loved one, you're not doing them a favor. Because as long as you keep their body intact and not to decompose, their neshama never is departed from it, and therefore undergoes this tremendous tsar of being connected to the guf for an extended period of time.
So why can't you burn it?
Some before Shemesh would bring down, we don't allow it, but there are some mafarshim that say, because of kavod hames, whatever, that we don't, but for that reason alone, you would think it's well, not an issue.
Right.
But there's issues of tchias hamesim, because you have to have the lose, there's one bone that remains, that doesn't, and that's how the entire body is reconstructed at the time of tchias hamesim.
Graphic, but what about in the Holocaust, all the people that burnt, you see, all the people that got
burnt. So something which is beyond your control, then obviously they're not going to be held accountable for that, so I don't understand how that will happen.
That would also make it that when you say tzaddik, that they say that they move a body to Eretz Yisrael and they see that there's no decomposition, they say, oh, it's tzaddik. It would almost be a punishment for the tzaddik.
But the whole reason is because that it's considered to be tzar, that the neshama is connected to the guf, because the neshama senses the lack of what the body was, that senses the physicality and the lack of growth of that person. It should have elevated the guf. When it comes to a tzaddik, there's no need for the body to decompose, because that person has elevated the physical, his body, to a spiritual level. And therefore, according to that, that's why some of the Mepharshim say that they were allowed to embalm Yaakov, because the whole Isser is that the Neshama is connected to the Guf, but that's only because you're not a Tzaddik. A person who's not a Tzaddik has to undergoes this Tsar, being connected to a body which was not a perfected body. But when it comes to a Tzaddik, the fact that the body doesn't decompose shows the greatness of that person, and that the Neshama does not sense any form of Tsar.
But even so, they say that physicality and spirituality kind of are very inversely. The less physicality, the greater spirituality, which is what some people have said. I don't say if it's right or wrong, but some people have said this is why quantum mechanics is different than Newtonian physics. That physical bodies that have a substantial mass behave one way, and the things that have an infinitesimally small mass behave in a different way. So by embalming the body, even if it's a tzaddik, you're still tying them to a substantial mass. I don't know.
Now that's how some of Farshim explained why they were allowed to do it. Because the whole isser of why you're not supposed to do it is because you're causing the body, the person, more tsar by keeping the body intact. But by a tzaddik, it's not you're not causing the neshama any tzar, because it's a tzaddik. So this person who's just a stam girl, wasn't a rasha by any stretch of the imagination, but she was just a whatever. So for her, she was undergoing tremendous tzar, being buried in a machzel shokanim to the point that her neshama was unable to be disconnected from the guf.
I'll accept all of that.
Okay.
Let me see now. Two spirits are talking about all the problems that can exist in the world in the year to come. And all they talk specifically about is the first quarter of sowing your barley, or the second quarter of sowing your barley. Is there anything else to talk about?
Well, I guess...
Is very, very detached from Ruchnius. It's all talking about Panasa. They're talking economics. They're not talking
Ruchnius. Right. Well, Akol B'di Shemayim, Chatzal Yerushimayim, so they can't see in the future who's going to be a tzaddik and who's going to be a rasha, because that's not up to God. We have the Bechira. But Hashem has control over rainfall. That's one of the things that Hashem is one of the keys of rain. So He's in control of that.
But is this the only element that we're talking about?
Maybe this is one of the only elements that they were able to see. Or, right, if we're talking about him dreaming, so for some reason he's focused on this. You can imagine.
Because his wife was angry at him.
But it also happened to be the years of famine, so people were starving to death. So you can imagine, naturally, that's what people are thinking about. They're thinking about being sustained. And maybe this is also why he was dreaming it, because he gave one of his last coins, so he was thinking,
he was being rewarded for that action.
Maybe that's the idea behind that. Could be. It's possible.
He should have gotten rid of his wife. It was a much better situation.
Well, I...
in the cemetery.
Well, that...
Not only that, his wife is showing a characteristic where she's jealous of him having any association with another woman, even if the woman's dead.
Well... Yeah, I mean, it seemed like she was mostly upset that, you know, they had no money and they maybe had children and they were going to starve to death, and you have to think about your family first before you give in charity to this other person. Okay. That's one explanation that maybe sheds a little bit of light into this story. Also, based on this story, the Maharil says something else. He says, in his Sefer, he says, the Hatam, the Ein Kovrin, Rishayim Eitzel Tzadikim. Why do we not allow a tzaddik and a rasha to be buried in the same plot or next to one another? So he says, based on what we've just seen, Kivon Shalot Tzadik, Migalim Sodos Verazim, that these women apparently were not just simple people. The fact that they can go Afri Pargud means that they were righteous, they were Tzadikim. And they were able to reveal the deepest of secrets. And therefore, Ksharasha cover Liana Tzadik, so if you have a Rasha buried next to a Tzadik, Moinim Legolis Latzadik, he will refrain from allowing the Tzadik to benefit from hearing these words, Kedisha Yishma HaRasha. Because if the Tzadik hears it, then in turn the Rasha will hear it. And therefore, that's the idea that they're speaking to one another. That this is how the Sama Farshim learned out, and it ends off with Udavar Nifla. This is kind of a little bit out there. Another point, and then we'll move on. Says another reason why the tzaddik should not be buried to the rasha. To mishum shaharasha sovel yisurim ba'anoshim gam bekever. We see clearly that here. She was not necessarily a Rasha. She was buried with the improper clothing, and probably was because, the Mefarshim say, because it was people were very poor, and they couldn't necessarily afford the tachrich and the proper burial garments. So it says that another reason why a tzaddik should not be buried next to the Rasha is because the Rasha feels tremendous tsar, even in the kever. So what's the problem with a tzaddik being next to them? This is what it's brought down in the Shas and Chuvos Pri Hatzada. He says, because the tzaddik will look at this Rasha next to him who's in pain and will pain the tzaddik. He'll feel so disappointed that this person has reached this low madrega that he needs to be punished, that he in turn will feel bad. And therefore, that's another reason why the tzaddik's not buried next to the Rasha.
These people, these women, the one at least one who is buried properly, would go acharei hapagod.
Right.
And we say that the neshama can see from one end of the world to the other.
Right.
Whether somebody's buried here or in China, the Russia would know about the tzaddik would know about the Russia suffering.
Well, that's the whole question that the Gemara said before. Does a mace only sense its own pain? That's what we saw that. By looking at the medium-sized lines, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth line, it says, Amri b'tsar didhu yadai b'tsar diachrina lo yadai. It's possible that they only sense things which are connected to themselves, and no one else's pain. Well, but maybe tzaddik can,
right,
for some reason.
Let's take both possibilities. If it only senses itself, then it doesn't matter if it's buried next to something. If it senses from one end of the world to the other, it doesn't matter where it's buried.
But maybe because a tzaddik who is sensitive to the needs of people outside of himself, such as this chassid,
the world, not just to somebody that happens, not sensitive within a
12-foot
radius.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good question. So that's, you may not like that second answer. You might not like the first answer, but that's the second reason why we do not bury tzaddik next to a Russia.
And who makes the determinations of who's a tzaddik and who's the Russia?
Well, come on, you know who a tzaddik is. Who's a Russia? I don't know who a Russia is.
The way it looks to me is whoever can pay the highest level for a cemetery plot gets buried into where this would be going.
Okay.
I mean that concept doesn't make sense. And then I say, we think that this guy is a tzaddik, so therefore this is the burial place only for tzaddikim.
Well, we know that in certain cemeteries, like they'll have one designated places for people who are in the Chevra Kedisha or different sections of the Beis Hamikdash for different types of people that we have.
And it's based on what?
It's based on some of the things that we've openly seen them do in their lifetime.
And based on?
Money? What do you want to say?
Yeah, okay,
fine. Okay. That's
still the bottom line.
It doesn't have, but halachically, there's certain laws of kfura. Tzaddik is not to be buried next to a Russia.
Yeah, chalkas rabbanim.
Excuse me? Fine, that's all fine and good. But you can have a guy who is we have classic stories throughout.
We don't know who really is.
That's right. Exactly it.
Okay, I mean, this is the halacha, but if you can't practice,
we do the best we can.
But you can have somebody who's one of the shivim tzaddik, hidden tzaddikim of the world, and nobody knows about it, so they...
But who's going to think the guy's a Russia? Mamash, a Russia. A tzaddik and a Russia.
He can be a guy, also.
So who says the guy, first person's a Russia? How do you know? I'm not going to think it's a Russia. Okay. That's the story. And that story we derived a lot of interesting halachot from, and maybe some ideas that you like or not like. Let's move on to the next story. Tashma. So again, we're trying to prove or trying to understand the relationship of how Mason see this world. The Ze'iri Havi Machkid Zuze Gavi Ishmazinte, that Ze'iri deposited some money to his
landlady.
Okay. Ah, the Asi Ozil Lebei Rav Shchiva. So you think, you know, she was certainly going to take care of it. She's a very honest woman. She would never steal it. Unfortunately, one thing he didn't think about: she died. So now, what's he going to do? He lost his money. So what do you do when someone dies who has all your money? So you go to the basic varos and ask them where the money is. Also basra l'chatzer maves. So he went after her into the cemetery. Amrullah, he asked a very, very important question. Zuzi hecha, where is my money? So Amrullah, so she said, zil shaklinhu mitutoi b'tzenura didasha b'duch plan. Why don't you go and take it from Tutai, from underneath the hole of my doorpost, Baduch Plan, in such and such a place, a specific place. So, the Ema, and he says, and by the way, since you've already revived me and caused me all this problem, the Ema lo Ema, I want you to go and tell my mother something. Say the following: Tashaduli, to send for me, that she should bring for me, because I don't have it with me, misarkoi, my comb, v'gavoyta dechuchla, and my tube of makeup. Bahade plinisa deastilamachar, because there's this person who's going to die tomorrow, so go up to that person and say, could you please take these things? What are you giving this to me for? Because tomorrow you're going to die. Now, obviously, by you handing over a comb and a tube or whatever is not going to help, because they're not going to give it because they'll have died. But it's just coming to teach us, as we look at Rashi, Gufta, Kana, Obishvil Shemesa Yalda, since she died at a young age as a child, Amr Kain L'Agmas Nafesh. She was just saying because of the pain and sorrow that she was undergoing, because that she did not live a full life. So therefore, obviously, she wasn't really saying, tell my mother to bring me these things. But she's saying that I was a young woman that still cared about my hair and my appearances, that I always wanted to look pretty and look nice, and therefore I missed out on many aspects of my life. That's what it means. So what's the whole purpose of the story? Alma, yada. So we see that, in fact, they know. They know what's going on in this world. How do we know? How do we see from the start that they know what's going on in this world? Because how on earth otherwise would she have known that this person is going to
die
tomorrow? So it must be, they know everything that's going on in this world. So the Gemara says, no, it's not necessarily a proof. Duma Kadim, maybe there was there's a Malach by the name of Duma that came first, and announced to everyone that said, by the way, tomorrow there's going to be a new person, and they're going to come and visit us, and they'll be, unfortunately, this person's going to die. So the reason why she heard about it is not because she necessarily knows what's going on in this world, but rather because they were given this information. Tashma. When it came to the father of Shmuel, he was given over to a deposit of a lot of money which belonged to orphans. And you can imagine, Yisomim desperately needed that money, that when they get a little bit older, Avuah de Shmuel would give it to them. Kinach nashe, but unfortunately, when the father of Shmuel died, lo havi Shmuel gabei, Shmuel was not around when his father died. And therefore, because if he would have been around, Avuah de Shmuel would have told his son where the money was. So havi kakarule, what did they call this boy? Bar, the son of an achol zuzi diasmi, the one who ate up and consumed the money of the orphans, because all the money was deposited to him and now it's gone. So it was obviously not a good thing, and it was bothering Shmuel to the point that he had to do something about this. Ozel Basra, and he went after him. L'chatzir Mavis to the cemetery. Armeluhu, and again, all these stories possibly is a chalot. Armeluhu, he said, Be'ina Abba. They went up to someone, and he walked in and said, I want Abba. I want father. So Amrulay, they said, well, sorry, to be more specific. Abba tuva ika hocha. There's a lot of fathers here. So okay, I want to be more specific, no problem. Amrulhu, Be'ina Abba bar Abba. I want someone by the name of Abba bar Abba, the father, the son of father. So Amrulay said, Abba bar Abba nami tuva ika hocha. You're still not being specific enough. So Amrulhu said, Be'ina Abba bar Abba avua de Shmuel. Heicha, where is he? So Amrulay, they said, oh, do you want to know where he is? Solikum sifted the rakiv. He went up to the heavenly yeshiva. So he's busy learning in a shir right now. So you can't. He's busy. Give him a few minutes. He'll come when the shir concludes. So Adahachi, in the meantime, you know, Shmuel was getting a little bit antsy, waiting for his father to finish up in this class. Chazil Levi, the Yosef Abroi, he noticed the great man by the name of Levi, he was sitting outside. He wasn't in the yeshiva, the rakiya. So Amrulay, so he was curious, so he walked up to Levi, who was dead. He said, Amai Sabta, Abroi, why are you sitting outside? My time, little Salkut, why don't you go inside and learn in the Masechta de Rakiya? So Amrulay said, the Amruli, because it was said to me, Kol Ki Hanach Shani, all those years, to the Silkas, the Masivta, the Rav Ephes, all those years that I skipped going to this my Rebbe's class, he felt bad about it. Lo Malinan Loch, the Masivta, the Rekia, was not able to go into the Yeshiva. So obviously it's not talking about the Masivta, the Rekia, but it's talking about the level of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Vekas of Hashem. It's not talking about that they're sitting in a class, but that's what Levi was outside of it, which means did not have the same level of Devekas because he missed out on opportunities of learning and coming closer to Hashem in Olam Hazeh. As a person is in Olam Hazeh, is what will happen in Olam Haba. So therefore, that's explained. Adhachliyahach, in the meantime, Asavu. So Shmuel's father came. Chazid havi kabachavach. He saw that on one hand he was crying, but he was also laughing at the same time. So Amrulay said, my taima kabachts, why are you crying? So Amrulay said, I'll tell you why I'm crying, a very legitimate reason. The Ali causes, because I see that in the near future, you are coming, which means
you're
going to die too. So I'm sad that you're going to die. So my taima achicha, so he says, oh, why are you laughing? Why is that such a funny thing? I'm dying soon. He says, "Dechashivat b'hai alma tuva," because you are very chashiv in this world. People consider you very, very special. And of course, I'm saddened that you're going to die, but you should be rest assured that you will have a tremendous chelok in Olam Haba. So Amrulay said, "Ichashivna, if I'm such a chashiv person in the eyes of everyone in Olam Haba, now the Levi, They please allow Levi to ascend. So they allowed Levi to ascend, which means, again, it doesn't mean that he went to the Sefer Rekia, but they gave him an Aliyah. It was an Ili Nishma. Armulei, they said, Zuzi, they asked me, hey, where is this money? So Armulei, Zil, go, Shaklinhu, Ba'amta, Durechaya. Go and look in the case in the millstone. Eloi, V'tatoi, Didon, V'tsoi, they asked me. The money which is on the top and on the bottom, it's like a sandwich, is ours. That which is in the middle, they asked me. That money belongs to the Soman. So Omer Lay, so he asked his father, my time, Abdahok, why'd you do such a thing? Why did you sandwich our money square in the their money in the middle? So Omer Lay, I'll tell you. Because Ignubi Gandhi, if someone steals, they'll start digging into the ground and they'll see money. They'll take from the top and they'll steal our money. The Ochla, Ara, Ochla Medidan. And if the ground destroys it, it'll be destroyed from that which is on the very, very bottom, which is also ours. So we protected, I wanted to protect the money of the Solomon at all times. Alma, what do we see from here? We see the Adni, we see that the Mesim know that people know what's going on in this world. What does it mean that they know? So Rashi says, which is the last Rashi over here on this Amud, Amli, second last rather, Mi Choshev Bein HaChayim, who are considered to be Choshev in this world? Because he said, I'm laughing because I see that you are very Choshev in this world. How does he know that you're so Choshev? In the way the Rashi interprets it is in Olam Hazeh, not in Olam Haba. The way that Tosos interprets it a little bit differently. If you see this Tosos over here, last Tosos, Alma Yada, we see that they know. The fact that he said that tomorrow, or soon rather, you're going to die. So how did he know that tomorrow you're going to die? Must be he knows what's going on. If that's the Raya for Tosfos, V'lomatzli Shnui Kidol El. Maybe you can say the same answer as we said previously. You can't. That Duma Kodim, that there was a mouth that came and told everyone that he was going to die. Vermulhu. The Hainu Dafgul Alta, the only time the Malach is going to say it is if it happens right away. But this was not something which was going to happen immediately, and therefore, this is not information that the Malach would have been able to have revealed. So anyway, it's a Raya that they know what's going on. And for the Gemara, no. Dilma Shani Shmuel Kivon the Choshev Kadmi Umachrazi Panu Mokoim. Possibly, because Shmuel is such a big tzaddik, normally they don't make such announcements, true. But when it came to the Shmuel, such a great chosh of a guy, they wanted to make those announcements to let them know that he is coming. The Af Rav Yochanan Hadabe, says the Gemara that Rav Yochanan retracted, Rav Yonasan. Who is Rav Yonasan? The one who wore tzitzis out in the Beis HaKvaros. That said, why do I need to tuck in my tzitzis? After all, they don't know what's going on. He also retracted. Diomar Rav Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, Omar Rav Yonasan, Menayin Lameisim Shemasakrim Zeim Zeh, and you see this was said in the name of Rav Yonasan, who now agrees that Mason talk to one another and that they know what's going on in this world. Shnemar, as it says, and this was the proof that you said, Vayomar Hashem Elov Zos Haaretz Asher Nishbati LaAbraham LeYitzchak LeYaakov Lamor. And Rashi says, V'Misas Moshe Ksiv, when Moshe was dying, that there was a connection that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are aware now of the covenant that will now take place, that the Bnei Israel will enter Eretz Israel in the land of Canaan. My Loma, what does it mean, lay more? What does that mean, lay more, at the end of the Pasuk? Says the Gemara, Amar Kodesh Baruch Moshe, like Amar Lehem, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, I want you, Moshe, to tell the Avos, Shvuah Nishbati Lehem Kvar Kiyamti Levneichem. The shmu which I promised them is now going to be fulfilled. I'm going to see two more lines. Stop. If you think that they do not know what's going on, they do not care what's going on in this world, they only focus on themselves. So, ki amru hu mai havi. The fact that he told them, what's the difference? What difference does it make? If you open the top Rashi, ein mavinim klum el tzara de gufa. They only sense their own pain. So then, that Moshe tells the Avos that we're entering Eretz Canaan, it wouldn't mean anything to them. So therefore, it's a proof that they do know, and they are interested in what's going on in this world. So the Gemara concludes with the question, Elamai So Elamai, Diego, they know. So Lamu Lemehu, if they already know what's going on in this world, then why did Hashem instruct Moshe to tell the Avos that we're going to Eretz Israel? They know anyway. The answer is you're right. They do know anyway. But the reason why Hashem told Moshe to do that is Lafzuki le Tibusla Moshe, in order to strengthen the goodness of Moshe, that it was Moshe who was the instrumental cause of the Bnei Israel entering into the land of Canaan, or getting close to that point, and therefore he was the one that told the Avos. Not that the Avos didn't know, but the Avos were told again by him to give this information. But again, at this point, we do not find any clear-cut proof that the Mesim understand what's going on in this world, but Rabbi Yonasan understood that it's certainly worthwhile that we should be very cautious to be sensitive to the Mesim, because there's a very good chance that they do. Questions?
Please. Standard.